listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, July 10th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. You know, I'm glad to be here as always, but I'd like to first give a shout out to folks in that Hurricane Beryl, you know, and all of our, our family there. And
absolutely.
Actually, I'm quite sure that's where Wendy lives, isn't it? Where I thought she lived in Texas, and I could be wrong.
I was thinking Louisiana, but we're gonna confirm it. But nonetheless, you know, Wendy, if she's in that path, which Louisiana's right there next to, you know, the eastern side of Texas. Anyway, yeah, so, but anybody in the path, you know.
Just stay safe, everybody.
Absolutely. And thank you to those that join us live. We have a great program tonight. Wonderful guest. Looking forward to getting to that. And thank you to those that take the time to join us in the archive. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, with a very interesting topic, we have Dr. Zach Frame joining us. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I always love an opportunity to talk about astrology.
And we love the opportunity to talk with you about it as well. And tonight, very interesting topic, relationships among the stars, a discussion of aspect-based compatibility in astrology. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think you said you had a few points to get us started.
Yeah, so I guess I always like to kind of start with a little bit of a disclaimer because, you know, when we start talking about the interrelationships among the stars, we're talking about archetypal types of energies. It's not to say that every Leo behaves this way or that every Scorpio is this intense or that every Capricorn is purely and utterly successful driven. You know what I mean? To say that depending on what all we're talking about, which planets we're talking about, you know, it people are complex, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So when I start talking about the relationship among the fixed locations of the signs, that's not to say that this is a hard and fast rule. People are complicated. Mm-hmm. And your own experience, your own background, your belief systems, your childhood upbringing, all of those things play a role in what makes you you. So when we start saying things like, you know, oh yeah, Capricorn and Aries, they definitely are in a hard square with each other and there's going to be personality conflict. That's not to say that every Capricorn and Aries are going to have friends, although depending on their placements, they might. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my disclaimer. So when it comes to that, but there's there's a few different things that you want to consider when you're looking at like that, that type of compatibility. So we know that, among the zodiac signs, you have four different elements. You have fire signs like Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. You have water signs like Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. You have the air signs like Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius. And then you have the earth signs, Taurus, Capricorn, Taurus, and Virgo. And so those are, there's elemental compatibility. So the air signs and the fire signs, they tend to be more compatible. Both air and fire are a yang energy, the masculine half of that. They are assertive. They are the positive polarity. So when fire and air signs get together, it's like feeding the fire. You know, the air is providing oxygen to the fire. And so the creativity, the passion, the transformation that the fire tends to have already, the air feeds that, moves it around, and makes it bigger than what it is. When you add a fire and air sign together, you get 1 + 1 = 3. Similarly to water and earth, because with water, water's messy. You know, water just goes everywhere. If it doesn't have a container to hold it, it just makes a big mess. And earth tends to provide that container for the water, you know. So water signs and earth signs tend to be 1 + 1 = 3. But then when you run into the situations when you have, you know, an air and an earth sign, they kind of miss each other. Because they're not, you know, one's yin, one's yang, you know, one's up here and one's down there. They don't always, they might talk past each other, you know, or the air sign might feel suffocated, you know, by the earth because, you know, they want practical. They need things to be tangible, you know. So you can kind of see how that plays out. I'll take a breath. You guys want to say?
I've actually really enjoyed the analogies. I think you explained them very well. And again, some self-reflection as well. But it is always an interesting arena for me. You know, it's always just it. You know, it's important what you said earlier about the disclosure. Human beings are very complex, but it's also very interesting how some of these things fit together. And you know,
I have a question, if I may.
Sure.
Zach, the sun sign represents the physicality of someone, correct?
Not exactly. That's more your rising sign, because the rising sign is more like your body container.
Okay.
It's the physical you. It's like your mask to the world. Your sun is like the outward expression of your soul. It's what lights you up. It's what makes you gives your soul energy, you know, in this lifetime.
And the moon is the emotional, correct?
Yes. It is the more subjective, internal expression of your soul this lifetime.
So what do you look at when you look at compatibilities? Do you look at those three things together?
It's an excellent question. Depending on what you want to look at. So, like, since we're talking about relationships, you know, relationships are, again, complex, because what kind of relationship are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about a romantic relationship? Are we talking about a friendship? Are we talking about business and work? You know what I mean? So, like, depending on how, you know, we want to approach. So if you want to look at, like, romantic relationships, you might look at Venus. You know, because Venus is how we love. It's our love language. You might look at the moon, because that's how we express our emotions. You want to talk about how people work together? Yeah, you might check out the sun, because egos are involved, you know, or even business endeavors, you know. So depending on the kind of relationship you want to look at, you might look to different areas of the chart to determine that type of compatibility. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, it's interesting how many, because me being Scorpio, Gemini rising, Aquarius moon, I'm amazed at how many female friends I have who are Leo Virgo. And it is really interesting. And The Virgo ones, that's a different thing. I find there are some limitations, you know, but these Leo women, and I got to tell you, Zach, I think I know five women born on August 21st. That's crazy. Like when they say their birthday is August 21st, they go, another one? What's that about? You know? And so I tend to, but they're very strong women. They're very smart. And I appreciate that about them. And I also find them very loyal, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's funny because sometimes, you know, when you start looking at that compatibility, it's like there's definitely that earth water duality there, you know, but then the Leo, you know, like fire and like even with you and Michael, you know, you and Dr. Michael, it's this fire water combo, but it works really well for you guys. But there's again nine other planets at play for both of you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right. So
even though the suns, your sun, the ego, the outward expression part may not necessarily on paper, you know, be compatible, there are so many other things working in the chart that make you a pretty fabulous duo, you know?
Yeah, it works. You know, I'll take it. I was just trying to think of what my various – I was pulling up the chart that you'd done for me. I think it's been a couple of years now. I, you know, obviously Leo, sun, moon is Taurus. And I think you said that's kind of like the backup, right? The secondary.
The moon is the more your moon is how you are emotionally. So people are usually less likely to see that part of yourself unless they're close to you. You know what I mean? You don't let people see that emotional side of you unless, you know, you let them. You know what I mean? And so Taurus is a great place for the moon. It's very it's treated like royalty, you know.
Uh-huh. Like I'm liking this already.
Yeah. You know, it's an esteemed guest for the moon. it's a good place.
You know, maybe I was thinking Taurus, Earth sign, right?
Mm-hmm, that is
maybe a little water compatibility there, maybe.
Sure, definitely, yes.
And I'm, you know, being very narcissistic about this right now, but I'm trying to figure out what's my rising sign. Looking at the list here, what would that be?
Look at the first house.
Aha, also Taurus.
And that would be, yeah, so that's...
Double Taurus.
Double Taurus. So you've got that Earth, right? That Earth and that Scorpio, mm-hmm. really, or that Earth and that water, it provides that container. Not that Dr. Hunter's messy or anything, but...
I gotta say, I'm...
have a reputation, right?
Fair enough, but I got a messy reputation. At least if you look at my house. But,
interesting, I think also about parents and children, Zach. I have two daughters. They're both Aquarius. My oldest has an Aries rising and my second has a Pisces rising. And they're very different, but we all get along. My oldest with the Aries rising is a little more demanding, you know?
Yeah.
My other daughter with the Pisces rising is, she's very kind, very sweet, slow to make decisions. You know, got to weigh everything out, but we all get along. It's crazy. You know,
that's the key thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and so I find that even with parents and children, you can have a child come into your life where, like, my son and I are estranged for many years. He just didn't like me. You know, it's and he's Pisces through and through. I forget all the things in his chart, but you know, he's over there. You know,
sure.
And of course, he got scooped away by the church, et cetera, for those who don't know that. And so it's just a thing. It took me a long time to come to terms with that and understand that he's the soul here. I was the vessel, did my job, and he is free to go live his life and not take that personally. Very difficult to do in families.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, you know, so aside from even the elemental compatibility, you have three different modalities. In astrology, when we talk about modalities, we're talking about where in the season the sign occurs. So the signs that bring in the season, we call those cardinal signs. And that's like Cancer brings in the summer, Aries brings in the spring, Libra brings in the fall, and Capricorn brings in the winter. So all four of those signs are considered cardinal. Fixed signs are the signs that occur in the middle of the season. Fixed signs seek to sustain. Cardinal signs are really good at getting things started. I mean, they're cardinal signs. They're literally starting the season. But psychologically, those signs, Aries, Libra, Cancer, Capricorn, they're good at getting things started. Fixed signs tend to be a little more stubborn. They tend to be a little more fixed because they occur in the middle of the season. And their purpose is to keep it going, to maintain the status quo, to maintain what's happening. And that's why, you know, sometimes they don't like change unless they're being made deeply uncomfortable. And those fixed signs are Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. And so you have that modality. Yeah. Those are the fixed signs. And then the last modality is the mutable signs. And the mutable signs occur at the end of the season, and they are to wrap up the one and get us ready for the next. So psychologically, the mutable signs are highly adaptable, really great with just going with the flow. They handle change very easily. And those signs are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. Understanding those modalities, there's also some compatibility stuff that's going on there as well. If you've got two signs that are in the same modality, they're either going to be square or they're going to be in opposition. And square, if you think about, because we've talked about the lunar phases before, if you think about the square position, that's like a first quarter or a last quarter moon. And so the square is a 90-degree angle. And you think about like two people that are squared up in a boxing ring and they're getting ready to like go at it. You know, they've got very different competing perspectives. They will conflict. They will have an inherent personality conflict. So like for a Capricorn, I'm a Capricorn, that would be Aries and Libra. Aries and Libra are square on either side of me or on either side of Capricorn. And so you'll often notice there's some personality conflict. There's like competing perspectives on how to do things. And you think about, you know, Aries is a cardinal sign. Capricorn is a cardinal sign. Libra, they're all cardinal signs. We all have an opinion on how to get things started, but we might not agree on how we go about getting them started. As a Capricorn, I'm going to take a very grounded, practical earth approach to getting things started. Aries is going to take a very, well, we're just going to do it this way now because it's what just came across my head. You know what I mean? They're very spontaneous. They're very shoot from the hip, like act now, think later. You know what I mean? Whereas same with Libra. Libra is going to, they're going to initiate it, but they're going to start by weighing all of the sides, even the sides that nobody's even mentioning. They're going to be like, well, let's consider this, you know? And so as an earth sign, there's some conflict with the fire. The earth is going to put out the fire. The earth's going to not make sense to the air. So those squares, whatever you are square to, there's going to be some inherent personality conflict. Now, that's not to say that it can't work, you know what I mean? Because if you work through the conflict, both sides are stronger because of it.
That's a really important point.
The question is, how do you handle the conflict?
Right.
You know what I mean? Healed signs are going to handle the conflict better than unhealed signs.
So let me ask you, you have read and looked at both the charts of Michael and myself. Michael and I get along really well. and you know, we've got a good chemistry. And I think it was said in the chat that, you know, Michael's very grounded and I'm more creative, but it works. When you've looked at both our charts, what do you see as these measures of compatibility that might explain that?
Oh, man, if I had that question prior to our session, I could have pulled up a synastry chart and like, you know, looked at all the details. But I mean, you said you were Scorpio, Gemini moon. What was your rising sign?
Aquarius.
Aquarius. Yeah. Your Aquarius rising?
No, Aquarius moon.
Aquarius moon.
Gemini rising.
Okay. And then Michael has, he's a double Taurus and a Leo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like that, it is such, I'd have to look at like, you know, kind of the whole chart, but just like based on that, like the Scorpio that you have with his Taurus, that alone kind of works great. The Gemini can work with anything. And mm-hmm. that mutability in the moon makes, Dr. Hunter, that makes you very flexible in that way. Emotionally, you can talk about whatever. You can just go with the flow. And Gemini has no problem with that. So I think that that is same with Aquarius, because, you know, Gemini and Aquarius, they're both air signs. They're very communicative, you know, so it's like there's the emotion with the Scorpio, the communication with the air signs. Michael brings in the practicality and brings it all into tangible, you know, makes it physical so that, you know, we can all enjoy that, you know?
Yeah. It just works.
It's interesting, and it does. You know, I'm not going to argue with it.
If I would have looked at those signs together, I'd say, ooh, that might be rough. But I don't find it one bit rough.
Well, I mean, to people that listen live anyway, it's behind the scenes that Dr. Vicky's always abusive, so I don't know. But
yeah, well, I know. I kind of kick you around a little bit.
So if I can, Dr. Jordan was asking a question in the chat. I'm not very good at keeping up with the chat, so I'm real proud of myself that I caught this. Dr. Zorn says, Dr. Zach, what is your perspective on the kind of problems which squares can manifest? Mm-hmm. Versus the opposition. I was changing this throughout time. I can't figure which one more objective, more versus personal. If I understand your question right, it's one of the things that I kind of learned in my early astrology days is the oppositions. The oppositions require balance. You know, how do I want to say this? Early in my astrology days, I was watching a YouTuber before I actually took classes at the academy, and she was explaining how opposite signs are the same but opposite. Like they're in opposition to either, like Cancer and Capricorn are the same but opposite. Cancer is very centered on the home. They want to take care of the home. They want to take care of their family. But Capricorn is too, just in a different way. Capricorn wants to make the money to provide for the home. Whereas Cancer wants to provide in the home, you know, they want to take care of you in that way. So like, when we look at those oppositions, you know, even, and I was thinking about this prior to the broadcast, you know, Aries and Libra, they're on an axis and they're in opposition to each other, the same but opposite. Aries is very me-centered, whereas Libra is very other-centered. It's they're still focused on that relationship, but one's more me, one's more you. Taurus and Scorpio, that's kind of like a safety axis, because Taurus wants you to be physically safety, Taurus is concerned with your physical safety, whereas Scorpio is the opposite of that, is more concerned with your emotional safety. The next axis between Gemini and Sagittarius, it's kind of like the learning axis, whereas Gemini wants to learn about the small parts and what makes it go, whereas Sagittarius is more big picture philosophical. Learning and seeing how things fit together in the big way. Talked about Capricorn and Cancer. They're both concerned for the home, but one's, you know, inside, outside. The Leo Aquarius axis is friendly, fun, performative to some way. Leo's like, look at me, and Aquarius is like, yes, let's look at you, you know. And so that's a very, you know, that's Leo's fun, celebration and children, and Aquarius is humanitarianism and and networking and connecting and out-of-the-box thinking. And then the last one is Pisces Virgo, and that's like the service sacrifice axis. Mm. So in terms of compatibility in that regard, it's like they're similarities. They're compatible. Squares are not really compatible. There's conflict. They have to work harder. Squares have to work harder to get to the same place, if that makes sense. I don't know if mm-hmm. I answered your question, Dr. Zorn. I tried.
Well, and it's, you know, one of many variables. And the other thing I was thinking about, too, when you have things that might not coincide according to the signs, but you have each individual has good interpersonal skills. You know, I've always found that a measure of conflict in its most pure sense of, you know, people like me, I find truth through argument. You know, and I mean that in classical, not emotional, but just, you know, debate. And I think that you can refine a product, a thought, an idea through that kind of competition, that kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm using conflict wrong. Am I on any kind of...
No, I think so, because like that's what... Go ahead, Dr. Honor.
Yeah, Michael and I have talked about this, because when, you know, and because I'm not like that. He likes to poke at something, and I find that perfectly boring and way too much work. And we're okay with that, and we learn from each other when we have these discussions. Mm-hmm. You know that there's a different way to inspire conversation. You know, and for me, it's I don't really care to talk about it, but it has to be really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's all. And at this age, but that's where the age thing comes in, is at this point, been there, done that, and I've got nothing to say. I just watch the show. So and that's a different perspective when you go through all these cycles of life. Don't you think, Zach?
I think so. I think that I don't know if I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
Well, because as your planets transit and you mature, you grow, it's like you process mm-hmm. more things and work through different things with yourself. You talk about the psychology, the emotional, mm-hmm. And the development. And it's like what I was when I was 20 or 40 is very different, you know, at 69 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's... I appreciate very much where Michael's coming from, and I'm not being condescending to say it's about age. It's about that learning process, because there's a lot of things that I wish at this age I could be more kind of inspired to talk about, you know, but through the cycles of life it just changes. So mm-hmm. I guess the question would be, you know, to Zach, is somebody, when you look at somebody's chart when they're older versus when they're younger, incompatibilities, is that play a role?
It's funny that you say that. I'm not in the dating scene, but if I were, I would say that I would not date anyone who has not experienced their first Saturn return.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Yeah, can you... define that real quick for me.
Yes. So there's a it's an age thing, because, you know, around 28, 29, 30, we experience our first Saturn return. And wherever Saturn is in your chart, and we've talked about Saturn on the broadcast mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
Wherever Saturn is, you're at least going to feel slower in that area of life than your peer group. Okay. So like if you have a seventh house Saturn, I don't know anybody who does. That's just the example that came to my head. But the seventh house is about relationships. It's about one-on-one marriage. It's partnerships, but it's the kind of relationships that you have in one-on-one situations. And if you have Saturn there in your birth chart, chances are maybe, you know, you don't really find a good relationship until after your first Saturn return, because Saturn holds you back. Saturn forces you to do the work in that area, wherever he's at. So this person, whoever, you know, has a seventh house Saturn, might have some really challenging relationships. Maybe Saturn puts the squeeze. Maybe they feel there's a lot of pressure on them in relationships. Maybe they feel like they're being squeezed, you know, in a relationship or what have you. And after they have experienced the 30-year cycle that comes with that, you talk about experience, you know, that Saturn spends 2.5 years in each sign as it moves around. So over that 30-year cycle, it's doing work in every single area of your life, because as Saturn is transiting that 2.5 years, it's moving through an area of your life. Maybe it's working on your finances. Maybe it's working on your communication. Maybe it's working on your children. Maybe it's working on your health. Excuse me, I got excited. Maybe it's working on your health. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, once it goes all the way around and it comes back to where it started, then it's releasing the pressure that it's had on you for that 30-year cycle. So for me, as somebody who is, you know, looking at that, like, I would say there's a level of maturity that just has not happened until they make it to that first Saturn return. Technically, astrologically speaking, they're not an adult until they have had their first Saturn return.
That's fascinating. Now, you know, this is where sorry, Michael, can I go with this for a sec? You know, we have a really high divorce rate all through North America. And I guess, I don't know about Europe, but I think it's high. And I think that's due to the times, because there was far fewer divorces 100 years ago. Is that because of the way life was and they were kind of forced to stay together, or, you know, circumstances, and they could grow together through that Saturn return? And now we're having a more difficult time working through the Saturn returns?
That's a huge mixed bag, because, you know, we have definitely been very religious as a culture, like as a people, like we've always sought religion as, you know, whatever. And I think that some of the dogmas would keep people together longer than maybe they would otherwise be. I think that, research like shows us that like the brain's not even fully developed until 25. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if you're going to get married before then, you know what I mean? Hopefully you marry somebody that you can learn and grow with.
Right.
But I think a lot of times that doesn't happen. People don't necessarily realize that they're still learning, or they'll have kids. I mean, most kids don't realize that they're watching their parents still grow up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
So Ione has asked, what happens in the second Saturn return?
Whatever themes were coming in the first will repeat in the second, but at a lesser degree. They're not nearly as significant on the second one, but the second Saturn return is your what's the word I'm looking for? Not initiation, milestone, I guess you could say, into like older age, into I don't like to use the word elder, but wise age. You know what I mean? It's the third sight. A lot of people don't make it to a fourth. You know what I mean? So like that last Saturn return, or that second Saturn return, is, you know, your is, I guess, like an astrological awareness that you're in the final phase of life.
Yeah, I understand that. So Audra has said in the chat, she really appreciates that way of thinking about aging relationships. It's not so much a number, but a level of experience that you just can't rush.
Yes.
So
yes,
she appreciates that.
And that's not to say, because, you know, like life is humbling. Like, you can't, you know, until you have experienced the loss of a loved one, it's really hard to understand that feeling. You know, you can sympathize with someone, but until that's happened to you, it's really hard. There's a level of experience that just can't be, you know, you can't get it any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you say you wouldn't even look at a relationship, well, you obviously did, because, you know, you two got together younger.
Right.
How long have you been together?
17 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Whoa. So you did your Saturn returns together.
We did. We absolutely did. And I'm not, you know, thinking about my partner, I don't remember specifically what his looked like unless it really could, cause you know, there was a lot that was happening. My mother passed, we bought a house, we got married, we got a dog, like all of these things happened within 6 months of each other.
Wow.
Which was really kind of a whirlwind, you know? And so I don't know how much of my Saturn return was just influencing him because, I mean, you're older than he is. So I technically hit it a year before he did, you know?
Right.
But it's hard to tell. It was a lot of major shifts happening all at once. So it was hard to tell, you know?
And, of course, you're looking at it in retrospect.
Right.
As if you had known more about it during the time, do you think you would have managed things differently, maybe? Or no?
I don't know that it would have made a huge difference for me. I wasn't really studying astrology then either. And I tend to use astrology more like a tracker than a predictor. I mean, there are definitely predictive things that you can do. You can look at solar returns and secondary progressions and whatever else, you know, to kind of make predictions on themes for the year ahead. You know what I mean? But like when something happens in my life, I like to go and look at a chart and see, like, look at the here and now, like the instant something happens, go and look at my natal chart with the transits to see like what transit like initiated this thing that just happened to me, you know, and that's always really interesting, you know?
So it really is. So when we get back to all the different kinds of relationships, you would look at in a chart, these would be the challenges. These would be the, where it's complementary.
Yeah,
these are the things to work on where it's complementary, and that could also affect the challenges and vice versa, correct?
Yeah, so, I mean, if I was looking at two people's charts, I would look at how they line up. Because when two planets are at the same degree of the same sign, we call that being a conjunction, that's the energy of the planets are said to be married. It's like they become one. So if you've got two people's moons together in the same sign, then they're going to feed off each other. They're going to think alike. They're going to emote similarly because they're you know, they're the same. We talked about the elements. We talked about the modalities. We didn't talk about the aversion. And I wanted to kind of mention that too because it's another type of situation where two signs have nothing in common. Every sign has three characteristics to look at. One is the polarity, whether it's positive, negative, receptive, assertive, yin yang, you know, a masculine, feminine, whatever label you want to stick to it. I tend to go yin and yang because when you start saying that Aries is a masculine energy to a female person, they tend to get really sensitive. And so I just say yang energy. But when you have the polarity, yin or yang. You have the modality, which we talked about, cardinal, fixed, mutable. And then the element, which you know, fire, water, air, earth. When they don't have any of that in common, then they're said to be like in aversion or in conjunct. And so it's like a blind spot. They don't have anything in common, no shared experience. So when they communicate to each other, they might talk past each other. They might not even know that they're in conflict because they're not even in the same planet, you know, in terms of their communication style. And so those signs occur on either side of your star sign and on either side of the opposite. So for Dr. Michael, you're a Leo. So your aversion signs, would be Cancer and Virgo, and also Pisces and Capricorn.
Okay.
Because with those four signs, they don't have anything in common with you. So Capricorn and Leo, I use this example because I'm a Capricorn with a Leo moon. So my sun does not have anything in common with my moon. Like, my Capricorn is cardinal, it is earth, it is yin, it is yin energy. My moon is Leo, so it's fire, it's fixed, and it is active, it is yang. So, like, sometimes my emotional self has a hard time seeing my own light. Sometimes it's like, or my own light is completely unaware of my emotions. You know, my ego doesn't see myself emotionally. Like, I have really big emotions. Like, Zach, you're being really dramatic. Am I? Am I?
Because
I just have my lived experience.
I love it, though. Interesting. You know, did you have more to add on that?
No, it was just more of the same, having those aversions. Yeah. So when you don't have any of those three things in common, then there's, you know, a disconnect there.
No. Zoran has mentioned, he said you can compare with numerology cycles and different challenges, just another system, in his opinion. I absolutely agreed with him. And one of the things that I have done in readings, I like to tune in. I don't know what, it's like a computer. I tune in because all my readings are done remotely now. So I find their name number, birth path number. And that's really what I'm most interested in. And, of course, I use tarot. But I have done it where in readings with somebody's partner, they, let's say somebody, one of them is a 3 name number and somebody's an 8. Those are very different expressions. 3 just wants to be happy and the peacekeeper. They just want to be happy. It doesn't mean they're strong. They just want to be happy. But the 8, you know, is more analytical, educational, likes to have its own ground. Some people might say it's the money power number, but you can't have money power without education. So it has to always learn and grow. And so those two can be at odds with each other. But very many years ago, I started to see a pattern of where what year you're born in, or that's your birth path, but what year is it now? So your birth month, the day, and the year 2024 is a particular number. So that's your expression this year. And I look for what it lines up with. If that lines up with your name number or, you know, your birth path number, then there's going to be either an internal or an external shift in your energy. But in relationships, I look at, oh, well, you're in a 1 year, your husband's already in a 2 year, you know, or let's say the husband's in a, you know, a 5 year and she's in a 1 year. So this is what you have to learn about each other and be patient for what you're going through, you know, and that I found with relationships has been helpful to people. You know, it's, oh, well, you know, if you're in a 1 year, he's in a 2 year, you're a year behind. He's already wanting to get out of the gate and go do stuff, and you're still figuring out and getting new ideas. So that's what I mean by it's been helpful to me to gauge where people are at and then, you know, kind of impart that in a good way to them in the challenges and relationships. But it's oversimplified. And I have to say that because what you're talking about, Zach, is way more complex and detailed than what I do. And I appreciate that. So,
well,
I just had to bring up some of the parallels in the...
Well, I think that's great. One of the things that kind of got me into tarot, or not into tarot, but into astrology in the first place, was learning that the tarot cards had astrological associations. I was like, oh, that's really neat.
It is fascinating, numerical and astrological. It all, there's this big relationship with that. It's like in the tarot, the 78 cards, the 22 major arcana, and the Fool is the number one. And it tells a story. If you go through those 22 cards in order, they tell a story. And my old teacher would say that they correlate to the Hebrew alphabet, so it goes way back. But then each number and each suit tells a story. And so does, but again, where am I going with this? The parallel with numbers and astrology is quite astounding. It really is. And so I don't know how that all happened, but somebody clued into the universe.
Well, it's interesting to look at those parallels, huh?
It is. It's fascinating.
I love it.
How? What did that change your perspective too, for you, Zach, when you saw the tarot and astrology being so closely related?
Well, what was interesting was, my grandmother was very Christian, and I had a lot of Christian guilt in my early tarot days when I started, you know, reading the cards and whatnot. And when I learned, as you were kind of mentioning, that there are Hebrew associations to the major arcana, I was like, well, this is interesting. So then I started kind of I learned the Hebrew alphabet for the tarot because I was curious. And so it's got, there's roots in Jewish mysticism. The Kabbalah, the Jewish Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, it has like a whole layer of tarot buried into the meaning. The paths that the connecting Sephiroth make in, God, it's so much. It's so much. It just blows my mind. It just blows my mind. There are intricate connections of the tarot with Jewish mysticism. Blew my mind. No idea.
That was interesting.
But that is fascinating.
Well, my late teacher, Magda, she passed in 1979. I was so grateful to have had 3 years with her. She had been taught by the old gypsies, and it was her belief back then, understand people, before the internet, and all in the underground, because folks in general society thought we were all witches and, you know, to be burned at the stake. And she had said that the minor and major arcanas were two tribes that joined their languages. Now, while she had been born in Canada, she spent a lot of time in Europe, went to, she had an Italian family over there, and she went to school in London, in England. And so again, that, and her best friend who helped her learn the tarot was, in fact, she was a gypsy from, her family were all gypsies from Europe. So it was their belief in what was passed down, that it was two tribes. And that's where the page is the communicator. You know, the page is that bridge between these two worlds. So that's where the Hebrew influence in the major arcana, and then whatever other tribe this was, in the minor arcana, and the development of the suits. You know,
that's
the...
so interesting, because, like, I mean, I didn't learn... When I started, I don't remember where I picked that. Maybe I picked that up from your course. I thought I had picked that up someplace else, but like with the elemental association with the ranks of the court cards, the pages are all earth. The rank the page rank is the element earth. So I always took that to mean, because, you know, as the messenger, the page is telling you to bring their energy into tangible results. Mm. You know, you're bringing it into a physical earthly manifestation. So if you get
I didn't write about the earth element in this, so you got it from somewhere else. So.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. So you put it all together, but that page is the messenger.
Yes.
And that's what she always taught me. The page is the communicator, the bridge, the messenger.
So cool.
See, and from all these different sources, the thing is, it's really important for people to know that you should take from multiple sources. Don't ever take from one source and think that that's, the answer. Because no matter what you read, study, it is still someone else's interpretation.
Right.
And what I appreciate about Zach is that he'll do what suits him, but he's always remains, open-minded and very non-judgmental. And you just keep learning. You just keep learning.
I tell people, because I know I believe a lot of woo. I know I believe a lot of things that are, you know, fringe by some people's perspectives. But I'm like, I am grounded. I am practical. I am research. Mm-hmm. If I use something that is woo, I'm only using it because it's worked. I tried it with an open mind and I kept it because it worked. If it doesn't work, I don't keep it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an
Go ahead.
I was just
reading
what
Zoran had written in the chat. Yep. 22 cars for 22 Hebrew alphabet letters. Exactly, but it's about the paths between the Zephyrots, and I think it's been developed by the Golden Dawn, so not before the 19th century. I don't know about that, Zoran. The Golden Dawn, if we're on the same path here, is late 1800s, early 1900s. The tarot and playing cards go back centuries, many centuries. So I think what happened during the turn of the 20th century, and again up until the 1930s, 40s, 50s, it started to change. And of course, the Rider-Waite deck was one of the first, to be published. In the case, everybody took off with their own interpretations, and everybody has a different idea. So, it's Damien. Sorry, there's a little humor going on in here too. Don't mean to get sidetracked, but this is important to go back and look at different sources. And don't take my word for it. Don't take Zach's word for it. You know, we're just researchers. We're just having fun learning about these things. But I like to go back prior to the time of the internet, and in my world, what was done by the elders, and what came before me and what they were taught. And it's kind of a more earthy root. It's like being in an indigenous country where you hear the elders talk versus reading a book or taking a course at school.
Mm.
And that's the difference to me. Mm. So, but yet that's why we have to really source out what we're learning.
And even in the astrology circles, there are so many, like, they're still uncovering, like, ancient texts and looking at principles of ancient Hellenistic astrology. And a lot of the predictive techniques that I learned in the academy are ancient Hellenistic techniques.
Awesome. Yeah.
Looking at solar returns, looking at secondary progressions, like a lot of that stuff, zodiacal releasing. I don't even know what that is or how to use it, but I know it's a Hellenistic term and it's very advanced.
That is interesting. Do you know how far back it goes?
Babylonian times, Greece, at least.
Like the Bronze Age, probably, like maybe 3,000-ish years ago?
I would say that's probably accurate. I'd have to look at Chris Brennan's book. I've got his book on my shelf, but it's each page is about, I don't know, a quarter of the page is Chris Brennan's text, and then the other three quarters of the page are references. Like footnotes.
And, I suppose everything is influencing everything after it, so there was probably a form of it before. I was just wondering if it stretched back to the Sumerian, the early, civilization written text, or if it was a more like, the Babylonian, Assyrian kind of age. History's my jam.
I don't think I know the answer, and I wouldn't want to tell you incorrectly. I know it's old. You know, it's as old as the stars, at least.
That's a good answer.
Fascinating. Just to update anybody who's listening in the archives, Jerry has mentioned Copilot says tarot cards were invented in the 15th century Italy, used for a card game called Tarocchi, and only later became associated with divination and fortune telling in the late 18th century. That may not be true, Jerry. Somebody just extracted that from somebody who got it from somebody. Because if...
I assume Copilot is an AI source.
Yeah. Zoran's agreeing with her, but, you know, again, if back in the 70s, you know, my teacher can say it's been around for generations, and that it was two tribes getting together, maybe they were used for a card game and that was a tribe of people. I don't know, but I don't believe everything I read on the web, so I just shrug it off. That's something people want to read about. That's cool, you know. Yeah. To me, it doesn't matter anyway. So I'm just
With so many things, it's about what it means to you, and you know how we use it in our daily lives. Yeah, a quick search is kind of showing that. But again, well, and to support you, everything you know is built on things that came before. So.
Astrology being way old from the beginning of whenever.
Right. Well, there's no definitive answer.
So I think it's fair to say with our just with our discussion this evening, when it comes to relationships, people are complicated. Relationships are even more complicated. You know, and the aspects that the signs make, you know, whether they are square or they're sextile with, you know, or just in that sweet spot where they have absolutely nothing in common, you know, taking the whole chart into consideration is really important. And understanding that people are complex and understanding that people have different views of the world, whether that's through an astrological lens or whether that's through the lens of, you know, childhood trauma, whatever the case is, you know what I mean? I think the biggest takeaway is that, you know, doing the work on yourself, doing the reflective work on yourself is going to make you a better candidate in whichever type of relationship you're engaging in. And that Saturn return, right? I mean, but that's just fate, you know, that's just letting life kind of grab you by the hair and make it work. Make you learn those lessons, the hard lessons that we don't learn, you know, nicely, that we have to have, you know, we have to learn the hard way. I don't know about you guys, but I have to learn a lot of my lessons the hard way.
I think that's the human condition.
Yeah. You know, Zach, as always, we could talk for hours. And I mean, having you on is always such a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you so much.
Likewise. Well,
I always enjoy being on the show, and I love having a platform to speak about astrology. So thank you guys for giving me that opportunity.
It's just absolutely our pleasure, and you know, always interesting topics, you know, such a deep dive, and just echoing Dr. Vicky, thank you very much. It's been just a fascinating evening.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, maybe you can come on and talk about the tarot one time soon.
Oh, I would love it. I have so much we could talk about.
Yes, I love it too.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I'll just end on this note, people, no matter what out there, don't let them push you around. You know,
always
do
good
no
advice.
Harm, do right. Don't let anybody push you around.
Always
there.
Good advice. But
thanks again, Zach.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. You guys have a good night.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a great discussion. And thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. You know, we're going to be back next week. We're going to coordinate with Wendy, have her come on soon. I'm wishing that she's doing well. I haven't seen her tonight, but we're wishing her the best. And yeah, so thank you, everybody. And Vicky, always appreciate your last words. Don't let them push you around. Always great advice. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, y'all.